To take a slightly lighter look at science now, let me ask you guys a quick question. What do you call a train loaded with toffee?
Okay,
you're
choo-choo.
Normally pretty. Yeah, I knew you'd get that one. And what about this then? Why are ghosts bad liars, Helen?
Oh, you know, I just can't think. Chris, tell me why
Dave,
are ghosts
go
bad
on,
liars?
Dave.
I have no idea.
Let's ask Professor Richard Wiseman, who joins us from the University of Harvard. Hello, Richard.
Hello there.
Now, do you know the answer? Why are ghosts bad liars?
Ghosts and bad liars because you can see right through them.
Ba-boom. Yeah, you got it. Now, look, these are all rubbishy cracker jokes, something you've
they're
been
terrible.
Looking at. You acknowledge yourself they're terrible, but you've been researching all about the subjects of cracker jokes. Why do we have this obsession with them?
I think they're really interesting from a social psychological perspective, because I think one of the key questions is, why aren't they better? You know, what is going on
Please,
that we all want to tell each other these terrible jokes? And I think that's the real key to their longevity, is that if you open a cracker with a good joke and you tell it and it falls flat, well, clearly it's your problem as a joke teller because you had good material and you failed. If you've got a bad joke and you get no laugh, in fact, if you get a groan, well, you can just blame the joke. There's nothing embarrassing going on socially. So I think they're actually rather clever. What they're doing is about a kind of group experience. We're all going, oh, my goodness, that's terrible. But it's not putting any pressure on the person whose job it is to tell the joke.
So you've done some actual physical research on the types of jokes that get told and the types of people that like and don't like telling them. What did you find?
Well, when we asked people, you know, do you enjoy telling cracker jokes? It was the people that were the self-confessed poor joke tellers that said, yeah, that's really what I enjoy. And part of it is, of course, the joke's written down for them and they're pretty short jokes. So you don't have that terrible moment when, you know, your uncle at the dinner table has just gone on for 20 minutes and then just suddenly forgotten the punchline of the story. So that they're short jokes. And as I say, they're not putting the joke teller under any pressure. So it was the poor joke tellers that tended to like them.
And was there any correlation with the cost of the cracker?
There wasn't. We had some very expensive crackers. We had some very cheap ones. And we asked people to come online to rate how funny they found the jokes without knowing whether they were looking at a sort of expensive or cheap cracker. And we found no correlation at all. So if you're after good jokes, there's no need to spend big bucks on the crackers. That's the big scientific breakthrough we can say is actually official science.
Thanks, Richard. We're looking at another aspect of Christmas. Tell us about your work on Christmas cards, because you've been looking now at the kind of cards that people send can tell you something about their personality trait.
Absolutely. This was another online experiment we carried out with the Daily Telegraph. And some of the previous research had looked at the size of the card and how much you're spending on it. And again, from a social psychological perspective, you're saying a lot about yourself. If you're saying, look, here's a really expensive card. First of all, you're saying, I'm the sort of person that can afford a card like that. And second, you're saying, and you're the sort of person as a recipient that I think is worth that sort of money. So there's a lot, there was previous research in the area. What we did was ask people to fill out a basic personality questionnaire, told us whether they were an extrovert or an introvert, whether they were creative or not creative, and so on, and then tell us what type of Christmas card they tended to give, whether it was one with a traditional design on the front, such as a religious scene, or a more kind of abstract one, you know, perhaps some holly or something like that in a rather abstract pattern. And then we could match those two up so that when somebody gives you a Christmas card, you can get a little bit of insight into their personality.
What did you find?
Well, the most traditional cards, the typical religious scenes, were associated with people who weren't quite so emotionally stable as most. And so this is a level of what's a signal of what's called neuroticism.
That's not very good for Christmas, is it? If the religious people are unstable.
Well, that's most of the research shows. It's not so much they're unstable. It's that they're rather anxious about the world. That's why they come to believe in religion, in part, is because it provides a kind of big comfort blanket for them. You know, deep down, they're quite anxious about the world. So that kind of fitted in, again, with some previous research. We found with the very abstract designs that these were people that scored highly on a scale which is known as openness to experience. So it's those people that tend to be obviously more creative, open to new experience in their lives, people who would really like to look at an abstract pattern and try and find meaning and within it, rather than being told rather obviously by the artist what that meaning is.
I like to send funny cards, though, Richard. So what does that say about me?
That says a lot. We did have a lot of people in those kind of, you know, cute sort of dog with Santa hat on or funny card.
I had Father Christmas sitting on a chimney using it as a toilet, and it said underneath, you know when you've been really bad this year.
You see, I think that's just sick. I think that's terrible. You should send a card like that. But, you know, each to their own. People who tended to send those cards were the extroverts rather than the introverts, so people who are more socially oriented. And also, if you got any glitter on the card, that was heavily correlated with getting the card from an extrovert, because we know that extroverts, their brains tend to be sort of understimulated. So they're constantly looking for other people, for noisy environments, for bright environments, in this case for glitter on the card, to stimulate them get them into that comfort zone.
Richard, I make my own cards. What does that say about me?
That means you're very mean, and you should get out.
Not true.
Very, very mean. I can tell you, as a psychologist, you need to get into the shops, just throw
but
all that card
stuff
away.
I put a lot of my
away.
Own energy and my own kind of thought process into it.
Yeah. But not your own money, interestingly enough.
The materials, Richard, doesn't she?
That's
presumably.
True. These days it's expensive. That's true. Well, I think what's interesting... about that, he says, backtracking very quickly. I think what's interesting about that is you're saying a lot about yourself. You're saying, look, I'm a person who's going to invest my very valuable time in making this thing. I'm a creative type of person. So, again, you're telling us a great deal. You're not going to go into the high shop and just sort of a high street rather than just buy something from the shops. It's about creating something individual for each of the people you know.
So it's quite interesting what you can get out of cards. But let's move it on a bit, because the wise men allegedly followed a star to find where Jesus was. So let's look at astrology for a minute. What does astrology tell you? Is there any basis in that at all?
I don't think so. I mean, one of the chapters in the Quarkology book is devoted to looking at some of the evidence for astrology. And certainly people believe it's the case. Certainly when they read their horoscope, they go, oh my goodness, you know, that describes me. But of course, that's not science. That's not a controlled experiment. And lots of those horoscopes, in fact, even if you employ a professional astrologer, they will give you a reading which lots of people think, yes, that's true for me. There's nothing special about that reading. There's nothing idiosyncratic in there for you. It's just you read meaning into these fairly general statements. And some of the statements will be double headers, such as, sometimes you enjoy going along to parties, other times, you know, you want to be alone. Well, of course that's true of everyone. There's nobody that would always want to be at a party or always be on their own. Other times they're statements which we really like to believe about ourselves. So if someone says, you know, that the stars suggest it's going to be a great week for you and you're the sort of person that's got a lot of untapped creative potential, we all go, yes, that's incredibly insightful. How on earth did you know? So astrology, in that sense, is built on psychology. But I don't think that there's any way of looking up to the heavens or looking at where the stars are when you were born and actually predicting your future.
That's quite good. I wonder if Jesus knew that when he was born on the 25th of December and he knew it was going to be Christmas. What an amazing possibility. Richard, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
That's Professor Richard Wiseman. He's from the University of Hertfordshire. He has a fantastic book out. I spent this weekend reading it, and it's called Quirkology, and it's published by Macmillan. Dave, what have you got people doing for Kitchen Science?
Trying to get people to push buttered toast off the table, see whether it lands butter side up or down. We've had a couple of phone calls in already. John in Colchester's had it landing up, butter side down 8 times. Every time he tries it, different heights, all seems to work.
Butter side down.
Butter side down. It's looking like a very unlucky guy. And Sonia from Kettering, 4 out of 5 times, butter side down. So
Bar Gavin Kettering says, his bread's landing butter side down 3 times out of 5. Mark in Bletchley, not so successful. I'm throwing butter bread all over my kitchen and I've given up, which is a bit of a worry. Anyway, if you want to have a go, we're doing a big radio experiment. Does your bread always land butter side down? So please, best of 5 trials, push your toast off the edge of your table and see which way up or down it goes.